Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today I'm Darren Hefty along with agronomist Lee Fisher. Special guest today, Lee. Kind of nice having somebody in that other chair other than my brother for once.
Yeah, hey, I got big shoes to fill, so we'll see how it goes.
You know, we're going to basically take calls and questions all throughout the show today. Our phone lines will be open at 844-44-AG-PHD. If you have an agronomy question, we'd love to help you out. I've got a few soil tests here we're going to talk through today. If you want to send us a soil test or just send us an email with what your question is, you can certainly do that. radio@agphd.com is our mailbox. And then you can also find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media or Darren Hefty. All right, Lee, I got a lot of questions coming in from farmers right now. What do you find as some common ones that you're hearing from guys as they start finishing up their plans going into the 2019 season? Is it soybean traits? Is it herbicides, rebate programs? What are the big things you're hearing?
All of the above. I think one of the biggest ones was soybean traits, wanting the know when that new Enlist was going to, the E3 beans were going to get approved. That was kind of basing some decisions for guys. Fertility questions. One of the big thing is at least in this area, a lot of fall field work didn't get done and fall fertility didn't get done. So, what kind of options do they have this spring to be able to get that completed?
Yeah, that is a real challenge. And then, of course, you throw a few feet of snow on top of everything, and it doesn't exactly fix up all those problems out there.
No.
You know, it's been interesting. A lot of your guys, too, Lee, you've got to have a lot of guys that have cattle out there. And we get so many questions from people, wow, all these winter storms, how are the animals doing? The wind is not a good thing. We don't like to see a tremendous wind like that, but wow, the cattle have done well. They've really handled the cold well, and I think there's a lot of factors that play into that.
Yeah, I mean they've most of the guys that deal with it have livestock. It's been a trying winter. It hasn't been horrible, but you just do your thing and try to keep the cows as comfortable as they can be. But overall, it's been pretty good. Some guys are going to be jumping into calving here soon as well, so it'd be nice if the weather would turn around a little bit, but we'll just have to see what happens.
You know, when it comes to that fertility thing, I know you've been working on fertility recs with some of your customers that you work with. And you think about things like P and K, and in a dry state like South Dakota, people like to get that out in the fall on some of this heavy ground, especially if it's no-till, but even if they're in conventional till. Do you see more guys going with the planter and doing some liquid things, or what are a lot of the farmers you're talking to doing?
No, most guys I deal with, I mean, they're getting it out in the fall, which I'd like to see that happen, but this spring, I mean, we have discussed some issues of going with liquid with the planter. I mean, there's options to do it that way. We'll have to see what guys end up doing because I got some guys that like to strip till, and I'm not a super big fan of strip till in the spring. But, we're just running through those options at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm really excited about this. I was just doing an interview on another radio show this morning, and they'd asked me what I thought going into 2019. And I said, I'm really optimistic. And so why are you optimistic about yields on your own farm? And I said, because we have some moisture to start with. And, a lot of years it's bone dry. And here we go. I mean, I'm choosing the positively. We've got tile out in our field, so hopefully we can handle the excess of moisture. But at least we'll be fully charged going into the year in case we end up with some heat and some drought.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we are definitely going in with the profile fully charged. Most guys are pretty optimistic. You're hearing some positive on the trade talks and stuff with China and, new traits coming out. So I would have to say overall, most guys are pretty optimistic going into this next year.
I sure think so. And like you mentioned about the fertility piece, yeah, we've got a little work to be done, but what else is new? I guess there's always something. I mean, you can't ever be perfect going into the year.
No.
So we get that, and then weed control. And we get a lot of questions about our 3-pre program. Janelle, do you want to just start us right up on the mailbag to begin with?
It's the mailbag!
I got a question from John in Iowa, and you get this all the time, Lee. He said, I'm interested in using your 3-pre program, Prowl H2O and Authority MTZ look like products I'm going to use. Just wondering, can I work them in all at the same time? I'm in an area where I can't put the Prowl on pre-emerge without tillage. So just wondering why they have that restriction north of I-80 as well.
Yeah, I have zero problem working either one of those two products in. In fact, I would prefer that, especially if you're north of I-80, but you're not really supposed to put that that Prowl H2O on pre-emerge.
Yeah, and kind of the big thing there is, do you put it on right after planting? And we don't like that. We just we're just taking too much risk, especially being further north in the country. And if we end up with a time where we don't get a rainfall to spread that Prowl out, it's pretty concentrated when the soybeans come through, and they can develop a weak spot on their stem. If they happen to get up and then growing conditions really slow down, we get a cool down, and they just sit there, that Prowl could sit there and work on the stem in one spot and create a weak spot on the stem. So we're nervous about that. But in terms of those 3-pre's, I would say regardless of trait, that's something that a lot of guys are doing. And yeah, you can lightly incorporate those. With Prowl, you want to keep it fairly shallow. And with Authority products, you want to keep them fairly shallow. Now, Metribuzin's probably a little bit more forgiving than the other two. But yeah, if you're just lightly incorporating them, I think that's a good deal.
Right, no deeper than 2 inches. And make sure you're getting good mixing. That would be the two biggest factors that I would have, because if we bury it too deep, we're going to miss that opportunity on those grasses and small cedar broadleaves.
You know, for the guys that didn't get any tillage work done in the fall, and you say, well, I'm going out, I've got corn stalks, I need to work them in, I would recommend working them once first, then applying your product and coming back and just lightly incorporating that product after you do the heavy yep. tillage, because otherwise you're just digging too deep and you're going to spread them out too much and they're not going to work as well as you would like. Taking your calls and questions throughout our show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
White mold, sudden death syndrome, root rot. If you raise soybeans, it may seem like you have all the cards stacked against you when it comes to disease. But did you know there is a new cost-effective seed treatment which can help prevent all three? Heads Up Seed Treatment offers a new proactive approach for dealing with fungal and bacterial diseases. Compatible with other seed treatments, hedge your bet against disease this spring. Ask your dealer for Heads Up today. To locate a dealer, visit headsupst.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
Give your corn a strong defense against stress throughout the season with MycoApply EndoPrime SC. MycoApply EndoPrime SC uses 4 specially selected species of mycorrhizal fungi to protect your crop against stress. That means more access to water and key micronutrients while building a healthy soil structure for stronger crops for years to come. Stronger corn starts beneath the surface. Learn more about MycoApply EndoPrime SC at EndoPrimeCorn.com. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm joined with special guest, agronomist Lee Fisher, and I am Darren Hefty. We're going to get your phone calls and questions all throughout the show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got Mike with us right now in Illinois. Mike, how's it going?
Going good. How are you, Darren?
Good. So 2018, kind of an interesting year. Does it change your plans at all going into 2019?
Well, yes, it does. We didn't get a lot of fall harvest or fall tillage work done, and I'm a strip till guy, so I didn't get my strips made. So I'm debating. I mean, it's going to depend on the spring whether I get in there and get those made, I guess. Or else I'll just go in and no-till that corn on those bean stubble.
Now, if you did the spring strip till, are you using a shank? Are you using coulters? What do you use on that strip till machine?
I've got a coulter with just a mole knife on it, with an anhydrous knife on it. I'm not using anhydrous this spring, though, so I'll probably just make a strip without using any fertilizer.
Gotcha, just seed bed prep.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. We did not get much strip till done last fall either, and so we were kind of rethinking how are we going to do the fertilizer here. So, all right. So if you make the strip, let's go with the best case scenario. Let's say that we get a really really nice March and it warms up and things are dry. So you get out and make the strips to get the seed bed prepped. Are you just going to count on carryover fertilizer? Or are you going to broadcast before you do the strip till? What's your game plan?
Well, I did get the broadcast fertilizer done last fall. We found a time to get it on, so I did get that on. So
awesome.
I'm good there. So yeah. So my nitrogen program would just be some nitrogen with the chemicals, and then side dress the rest of it.
Yeah, we'll end up doing the same thing with using some liquid nitrogen when we do our pre's, and then come back and put more on later. Hopefully, we have a great crop coming that we need it.
Right. Yeah, we had probably the best corn beans we've ever had down here this year. So,
awesome.
We were happy with that. Yeah.
Are you changing your rotation? Are you adding any more corn acres? Are you adding any more bean acres this year?
I'm going to stay the same. I've been on a 50-50 rotation, although I probably will go to dicamba beans. Had some Liberty beans last year, and they got dinged pretty hard with dicamba drift, so I want to stay away from that.
Yeah, playing defense. What, Lee, what are you doing? Where are you seeing a lot of guys playing defense in other areas of the country too?
Yeah, they're playing some defense there. I would say one thing I'd have to say this last year with the Extend program has been a lot better. I mean, guys talking with each other, you know, what are you planting here versus what your neighbor got in that particular field. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of guys are doing the planned defense and kind of keeping that Extend in their back pocket, I guess.
Not trying to stir anything up here, Mike, but did your neighbors talk to you about that they were spraying dicamba, or is that something that just was a bad situation?
Well, I had a neighbor plant a lot of non-GMO beans for years, and he built up a pretty good weed problem, and said he's going to go to dicamba beans this year, so that made me feel a lot easier.
Yeah, that's a good spot for it when you get a weedy mess out there to try and deal with that. There's some guys, and I know Lee's working with some farmers this year that are going to do some non-GMO beans and try and take that premium. Did you come away with any thoughts about the non-GMO beans, or is it just you got to manage them a little tighter?
Well, yeah, they need a lot more management, and I don't know. They don't seem to be quite as get a good yield out of them like you do with the others, and so I don't know if that premium really would really make a difference or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. You got to look at what the net dollars are going to be in the end, and hopefully you don't give up some yield chasing after a little bit of a premium. Well, Mike, thanks for calling in today. Really appreciate hearing how it's going for you, and stay warm.
All right, we'll try. Thanks, Darren.
You bet. See ya. Got Marty down in Kansas right now. Marty, are you guys south of this cold spell? Or are you catching it too?
Well, right now we're 60 degrees, but it's coming. We've been right on. You get south of us 150 miles, and heck, they haven't had any of this cold spell. We're right on the edge of it. So,
yeah,
we've had our own problems. We got cattle also, and it's probably been the worst winter ever as far as it just really here has not dried up enough to do any field work since the end of September. I think we got a day and a half of groundwork done. We've still got all of our ruts out in the field. We typically like to no-till all our beans, and then we will work the corn ground to blacken it up. But we still have all of our fall work to do. We got fertilizer thrown out, but it's just sitting there. We still have to work ruts in. And for us, insurance date, where we typically like to start planting corn is March 20. And we're a long ways weather-wise and work-wise from being able to plant corn.
Yeah, I can pretty much guarantee you that we will still have a couple of feet of snow March 20th. It would take a miracle to change that for us. Yeah. But our first plant date is April 10th. So even as far north as we are compared to you, it's not that far off. And you're right. It's just right around the corner. Even the April 10th for us, that's only, what, like 7 weeks away. So the days are going fast.
A lot of changing. Got to do a lot of changing, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think you brought up a great point, though, Marty, about the ruts. And that's one that there's a lot of guys out there that it's buried underneath some snow right now, and it's not maybe the first thing on our mind. But we got to fix those up this year. We're going to have problems.
I know it. And we've tried to Band-Aid them, and we won't rip it or anything crazy like that. We'll basically work them shut. You know, but we just don't like the deep till for us. Then it kind of compounds the problem later as far as mud. But you'll see them in the field next year. You'll see them in the soybeans, the old combine ruts. You'll be able to see where they were at if we get some stress on crops. I do have one question for you guys today. Dicamba beans, we've grown them since day one. We've never grown Liberty. I'll always stay with Xtend beans as long as they're available. I'm coming in. We're going to come in clean. I'm coming in with Zidua and Metribuzin. And I know we've talked before, my sprayer won't spray yellow, so I can't spray yellow. That's going to be our pre. I'm thinking about coming back in 28 days because I'll have to hit some Roundup because I'll probably have to use Gramoxone Paraquat on a burn down. So I'm probably just going to burn some Johnson grass. I'm not going to kill it. I'll have to come back with Roundup in 3 to 4 weeks. I was thinking about throwing some dual in, or should I go with a group two classic and Synchrony? That kind of stuff has not been used around here for years and years. I'm just trying to mix it up and keep from going all 14s and 15s. PPO wise, we have PPO resistance shown in our pigweeds. But from what I read, that should be only a live plant, not in a seed. What's you guys' feeling on a PPO thrown in there day 28 versus a group 2 type?
Well, the PPO you're going to have to throw, I mean, the PPO I would recommend would be an Authority or a Valor pre. And I think when we see the resistance, a lot of times we end up seeing it more with the post stuff than with the pre. But if your pre's aren't going to work, you've already got a group 15 in there with the Zidua. So I don't know that I'd add, well, I guess you could put some more dual in, a month down the road post. What are your thoughts, Lee? My thoughts would be if I can't use a yellow pre, I'm throwing in an Authority or a Valor.
I would agree. I'd like to see an Authority or a Valor thrown in there. And then I got a lot of guys that as far as another group 15, they're going out 28 days later and throwing like another pint of like a generic dual or something like that out there. But I would definitely agree with you, Darren, to throw some type of either Authority or Valor out there pre. And then, following up later with that group 15, with that pint of dual.
There are some weeds that the ALS products like Classic or Synchrony can get. It's just that you've got to watch out for soil pH. If you've got any high pH spots out there, that can be a problem for carryover.
Okay. You have a problem with throwing a PPO out there Antares is what Helena's chemical.
Like Flexstar or something post of Flumesivin? No, I don't have any issue with that.
I'm planning on being clean. I'm just wanting a layer to get me over the hump.
Yeah, if you got PPO resistant pigweeds, I don't know how many of them are resistant. Is it 100% or is it just some of them aren't going to die? Well, if you've got a few different modes of action in there that could take them out, like say it's dicamba in there your Roundup probably isn't going to do anything for you on that. That's kind of the big thing for us. We'd love to have two different modes of action that are working on it, which is why I like some of these stack products coming out. Hopefully Xtend Flex comes soon so you can throw some Liberty in there with your dicamba. Hey, Marty, we're up against a break here. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
No secrets here. We all know, regardless of the markets, balanced crop nutrition pays. Agro-liquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Agro-liquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agroliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean field, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean field and get rewarded with Roundup Ready Plus when you choose the proven power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Build with the best. When you choose Morton Buildings for your next farm storage building, you'll experience the Morton advantage at every step, starting before the walls even go up. Since the value of our buildings is in its ability to protect what you have stored inside, we ensure that every component is researched and tested to withstand the elements in all weather conditions. And we back it up with the strongest warranty in the business. Looks better, built stronger, lasts longer. Learn more at MortonBuildings.com.
One year it could be moisture stress, another Pythium or nematodes. So you need your soybeans to rise ready for whatever the season holds. Now one simple decision provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio, fungicides, insecticides, bioenhancers, and an industry-leading nematicide that strikes where nematodes attack. This season, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/riseready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
A pasture should have two things: grass and cattle. No weeds, no brush. That's why Chaparral Herbicide offers the broadest spectrum weed control available. It controls weeds other products can miss, like buckbrush and Canada thistle. And less weeds and brush in your pastures means more forage, so you spend less on feed. Chaparral also suppresses seed heads, lessening the effects of fescue toxicosis, all while providing season-long residual control. Visit NoWeedsNoBrush.com today and learn more about Chaparral.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today we're talking just before the break with Marty down in Kansas with pigweed that are getting to be resistant to more than just ALS products and Roundup. Now seeing some PPO resistance where Marty's at, and that's a challenge. He doesn't think that's widespread yet, doesn't think it's 100% of them that are resistant. I really still like that PPO in the pre. You're going to get a lot of weeds under control, maybe not those resistant pigweeds, but then again, a lot of the resistant ones we're seeing resistant to post-emerge products too. So it could be that they're resistant to the post, and like you say, when they're in the seed, Marty made the comment, when they're just germinating, we can still get them. So that would be something. And you know, we talked about using a yellow. Marty doesn't want to run that through a sprayer. So I would really strongly lean towards having that PPO in with the group 15 and with the metribuzin, so you get as many modes of action pre as you can. Lee, we were talking about the post options, and obviously there's group 15s you can throw in there post to get some more kick. You could, if forgetting about that PPO resistance, you could throw the Flex Star and that kind of thing in as well. But what are you doing? What you get guys doing a lot of different pre-emerge programs. I know you've gotten quite creative on some of those. What are guys mixing?
Well, there are. I mean, there's just a ton of options. I mean, a lot of my guys are trying to focus on that three pre as much as they possibly can. But if they can't, they're at least getting two sites of action out there to go after that that pigweed, the water hemp. That would be the standard that I'd have. I got a few guys that are doing, doing some type of authority product, whether it be like an authority MTZ, our authority first, and they're throwing in like a pint of a generic Duel. And then what we'll do is we'll follow a post. If they do not want to spray Extendamax, we're doing like a, you know, like a Flexstar, generic Flexstar combo with another pint of a generic Duel. You know, there's a lot of options out there. There's Warrant Ultra, which is, you know, Warrant and Flexstar together combo. So just really depends on the situation, but a lot of choices. But we're, you know, we're not fighting, at least up here right now, that water hemp, you know, showing some tolerance or resistance to the PPOs. We're at least still doing a pretty good job. But that's getting a little scary when you start looking across the board there, you know, of all the chemical families that we have and how water hemp is gradually adapting to all of those. And nobody is looking outside the box of that. And if they are, I think it's a long ways down the road, but it's going to get interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. There's no doubt about it. And we're kind of fortunate where we farm. We aren't in the heart of where this
right.
multiple resistance is at. But that's not the case for Eddie that we've got on with us right now down in Tennessee. Got a lot of resistant weeds down in your geography, Eddie. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So what's happening on your farm today? We were just talking to Marty over in Kansas. He said it was 60 degrees there, but still too wet to do anything.
Yeah, we're probably about 50, but we're trying to hold our head above the water because we've had 11 inches of rain since last week, and it came through and finally broke off Saturday night, but water everywhere, and that's kind of a continuation of last fall's harvest and through December and January also. Of course, we're feeding cattle along with our grain operation, so pretty sloppy out there.
Yeah, I got bad news for everybody in the south. There's record snowfall out in the mountains. We've got tremendous amounts of snowfall in the north, and unfortunately, we're sending it all your way, too. So I know the short term is wet, and the long term might just be wet, too.
Well, a lot of time one extreme follows another, and I guess if we're going to put up with this wet weather, we certainly hope we don't get into a drought this summer. So
That's about how it works out.
Do what?
That's about how it works out. You complain about water, and then it just quits for a while, and then you're not complaining about that anymore. So what are you thinking going into this next year? Are you going to change up your rotation a little bit, or are you sticking with the same thing?
Pretty much the same. I mean, it'll tweak a few acres more corn, but that's just because of rotation. We're not exactly 50-50, kind of farm-to-farm type situation, and we do have to travel some to, as most everybody nowadays, you know, from farm to farm to get our acreage together. And at least when we do move to one place, we try to kind of put it all in one crop to cut down on the amount of traffic that we have to deal with.
Yeah, we're pretty blessed where we're at, where we've got great big fields and hardly any people living around here, so it's easy to get down the roads, relatively speaking, where you've got smaller fields and a lot more people heading down the roads that don't really know what's going on in the farm. It's a challenge.
Yeah, we've often kid. Of course, it's south of Nashville here is a booming, growing area, and we've kind of kidded that we grow wheat, beans, and houses, and that's the rotation.
Yeah,
maybe they won't take all the land anyway.
Yeah, what kind of winter have you had there, Eddie? Now, you said you got a lot of rain recently. Has it been that way ever since harvest?
Yeah, pretty much. We've had a pretty mild winter. You know, it may have got down to 10 degrees is about as low as it's gotten, and which is pretty mild for us even. But we've had a lot of 40s to 60 degree days, and I guess that's one reason we've brought a lot of rain. Of course, I guess I'd rather have the rain than the snow that y'all are getting up there, having to deal with that. Of course, you're more accustomed to it than we are, but it kind of locks us down when we get much of any snow.
Yeah, I believe it. You're right. We're set up for it up here. We expect it. We're going to get it every year, so we got the equipment to handle that. But we've got some time, though. We aren't normally planting. A lot of guys will plant mid to late April would be the first stuff they'd put in the ground. When do you start putting corn and other crops in the ground?
Well, we're not a whole lot, which has always puzzled me. if we get much before April 1st, a lot of times we'll get some frost in early May that'll knock our corn back. I don't know that I've actually lost. Well, I have lost some in years ago. I'm 100% no-till. Of course, it doesn't warm up quite as fast. So, but people up north, you know, I'll hear it, listen to y'all, and they'll be planting north, and I'm still thinking we're too cold and worried about frost getting the young plants when it comes up. So we shoot for the 1st of April on corn, and used to go, you know, 10th of May, but kind of things have gotten to where, for whatever reason, that we've moved that up into April if we can get both planters running anyway.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of guys talking about earlier planting soybeans, and I know we've got some friends down in Arkansas that they said, boy, that was the best. It scared them. They said they had several times they were really scared last year when things got cold, but it ended up being some of their best beans they'd ever had, so they were really, really thrilled with that. So we'll see how they expand the experiment. But we're talking to a lot of guys that are doing that, even up here in the north. Last year it was 13 bushels difference planting about 8 days later from first planting to last. And you get those kinds of differences, that pays a lot of bills.
Oh, yeah. It's worth taking some risk anyway, that's for sure.
You bet. Well, Eddie, thank you so much.
I got an agronomy question.
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Of course, like I said, I'm 100% no-till, and my soil tests always come back real low on copper. What would you do on no-till? How would you put copper out?
Well, you can certainly do some stuff like in a 2x2 or that kind of thing. Are you set up with fertilizer on your planter?
No, it's all topical.
Okay. We did some copper sulfate treatments broadcast. We did them variable rate. If everything's low and pretty much evenly low, then you could just broadcast across the field. But if you got some fields that are high and or some parts of fields that are high and others that are low, you could definitely variable rate. I'd find a copper sulfate formulation that'd work for you.
Okay. Well, just about all of ours will test low. We're very, very high in phosphorus around here. In fact, a lot of our ground years ago was mined for phosphate, and
interesting,
a lot of phosphate in the ground left, of course. But that it seems like copper and our sodium. Of course, I guess sodium is salt, so you're always talking about salt and problems.
Yeah, and
salt,
here's another thing with this copper sulfate. That sulfate portion can hook up with that sodium, can actually flush out of the soil as well. Hey, Eddie, we're up against a break here. We'll probably talk a little more about copper after this. Stay tuned.
If you're a rancher who's obsessed with keeping your pastures clear, turn to Grazon Next Herbicide. It offers superior broadleaf weed control, so instead of thinking about weeds, you can think about the money you'll save growing more grass and buying less feed. Used early in the season, Grazon Next also provides residual activity that controls newly emerged weed seedlings, giving you season-long control. Start enhancing your land while you protect it. Visit leavetheweedstoss.com to learn more about Grazon Next. Always read and follow label directions.
In farming, there's a lot of variables out of our control. Don't let fertility be one of them. Let the experts at AgroLiquid move you closer to your bullseye. It's true. AgroLiquid fertilizers are formulated to keep nutrients available to your crop, and they have unmatched compatibility with other nutrients and crop protection products, which makes application more efficient than ever. But we also have the best people in the field, ready to talk about your operation, your goals. Go to agroliquid.com to move you closer to your target.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike incentive programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. You decide what's best for your operation, from pre-plant to harvest. Your retailer and FMC take care of the rest. It's really that simple. The exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing of the FMC Freedom Pass program make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. That's what we mean when we say we give you more freedom in the field. You'll experience more control and confidence too. Generics and imitators can't promise that. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. Today, I've got special guest agronomist Lee Fisher trying to solve some of these agronomic challenges with me. And Eddie had a great one. He's no-till, he's in Tennessee, and he's short in copper, pretty much across the board. He's trying to get copper out there. And Lee, you brought up a good point about copper. It just doesn't move a whole lot.
Right. I mean, that would be my biggest fear with spreading some copper sulfate out there, which is great. But, you know, how do we get it to get into the soil? And that's where I think, you know, if he could set himself up with like a 2x2 or something like that to be able to get a little bit of that down in down into the soil would definitely be a benefit.
You know, for us, we'll spread micronutrients like that on top, but we're coming through with strip till. And so with that, over a period of a couple of years, we'll get everything kind of worked up. But yeah, in a pure no-till situation, there isn't a whole lot of soil disturbance. That's one spot where I really like having that 2x2 option, just to, not only does it keep it more concentrated so you don't get tied up, but just getting it out there in the soil and getting it down where it's protected. You know, with the high sodium issue that Eddie talked about too, this is one where we face a lot of guys that have got some higher sodium levels. We want to look at water quality if we're doing any irrigation work. That would be one place it may come from. Another is manure. If it's coming from manure, we may have to limit the rates that we're putting out there, or maybe we just don't use manure every year and we say, okay, well, we're only going to use it once every third year or something like that to try and cut it down.
Well, yeah, and I really encourage guys, I mean, if you're running a manure program to, when you're getting that tested, and I've seen a fair amount of manure tests coming back that don't measure how much salt or whatever's in that manure sample, and that's something I would definitely encourage to see on there so that you know how much you are applying out there of salts with your manure applications, because you definitely, I mean, if we're getting too much out there, I mean, that might be something we want to get in a every other year rotation or every 3 year rotation if a guy could get it to work that way.
Hey, we still had Eddie on the line here. Eddie, did you have any other follow-up questions to that, or do you think we're on the right track here for you?
Sounds like you're on the right track.
Awesome. Well, we're kind of jealous of that 50-degree weather. We could handle some rainfall. It's a lot easier to scoop than the snow is. So
right,
good
right,
luck to you, I guess.
Well, we're going to be able to enjoy it, I think. We're headed down to the Classic Commodity
Awesome.
Tomorrow, so probably see you down there.
That sounds great. Make sure you say hi, Eddie. Thanks a lot for the call. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Lee, get another question. This one's interesting. What is your opinion on adding 2 to 3 years of pasture into my rotation? You know, I look at all the different crop rotations that farmers will do, and if you can make money on that and have pasture for a couple, 2-3 years in there, I think it's awesome. A lot of this ground, like we've got some ground that was pasture, and it was just this little chunk, and we were tired of farming around it, and so we just started farming through it. And wow, to see how that perennial grass built up the soil there with organic matter down deep, it's actually pretty good ground that way. I think that'd be awesome if you could make it work.
Yeah, that's a new one. I've never had anybody ever ask, of having pasture as a rotation. I guess my thinking about it, argument would be is, 3 years, can we get that pasture really established and get it rolling and do the things it's supposed to in 3 years? I don't know, but yeah, I agree. I mean, any of this ground that is that has been in pasture for multiple years, definitely, we're getting some pretty good crops and stuff off it. But I guess you think, Darren, in 3 years, a guy could get that established enough and get the benefits out of that?
That's a great question. If you've got irrigation, it would be much easier.
Right.
Okay, let's say you're going to do that in dry country. Getting that to happen with a spring seeding is tough. You probably want to be a late summer seeding. A lot of times my dad would say, if we're going to seed grass in our area, where we've got 6 months at least of winter, the best opportunity for us is generally in a month that starts with A, so either August or April.
Yep.
Now, if you get it done in August, you get up and enough growth and a deep enough root system that you have good winter survival, and then in spring, any of that hard seed that didn't germinate in the fall would normally be coming up in the spring, and you can get after it with fertility and whatnot. Plus, you've got moisture from snow melt and spring rains. If you're in an area that gets lots of rain, that's probably not a big issue for you, but that would be something I would think about if we were doing it up here anyway. But yeah, I think it'd be great if you could get it established and seeding cost and all those things you'd have to figure in. But if you've got cattle and you say, wow, I'm renting pasture, I could do this on some ground I had, I'd try it on a small scale, see if you can make it work. And if you can, I think that's awesome.
Yep, I'd agree.
All right, another question that we had, this one is a pretty common question that we get a lot. This one comes from Russ, and he said, I want to figure out how to calculate the pounds of potassium I'd have to apply to raise my base saturation by 1%. And he sent a series of soil samples here. We got 5 soil samples, and I'd start with this, Russ. Here, I'll give you the formula, and then you can calculate on all 5 of those. But I did calculate it on one of them just to give you something to look back on. When we look at figuring out how many pounds of product we have to add, what we'll start with, and here's the formula. We start with parts per million that you have in your soil right now. Multiply that times the percentage base saturation that you want. So in this case, the first sample has 159 parts per million of potassium. So I take 159 times the base saturation you want. Well, we have 2% right now. He wants to get to 3. So take 159 times 3, then divide that by 2. That's the base saturation that you currently have. And then subtract off the parts per million that you started with. So 159 parts per million, we have 2% base saturation K. So we take 159 times 3 divided by 2 minus 159. That equals 79.5 pounds of K that we need to add. Now, if you're going to put on potash, for example, Russ, well, potash is 50% K. Now, I know it sounds like it's 0060. That 60 is actually K2O potassium. In terms of just actual K, it's 50%. So just multiply that 79.5 times 2 to get 159 pounds of potash. That should move the needle for you, 1% in base saturation K. But here's the other thing that a lot of people forget. When we're looking at potash, it's a rock, and you've got some dusty powder in there, which is important that lands in your ground. It doesn't just blow away. But then there's rock, and that rock's going to take probably 3 years before it all shows up in your soil test. So our experience where we farm, where it's fairly dry, we get maybe 20 inches of precip, counting the snow and everything each year. It takes us 3 years to get that to work. Where you're at in West Virginia, maybe you get a lot more rainfall than we do, and it'll happen a little quicker for you, but that's what it takes for us. So I would expect if you put out that 160 pounds of potash, in addition to whatever this year's crop's going to remove, so 160 pounds of build plus whatever your crop removal is, then I'd run with that. So if you don't know what the crop removal is, just figure out what your yield goal is. Look at the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app, and it'll tell you what how much you would need for crop removal also. Thanks for the question, Russ. We really appreciate it. And if you have any follow-up, just give us a call and let us know what your question is. Got an interesting one here, and we may take this one into the break just a little bit. anhydrous placement with granular fertilizer. If you're doing strip-till, what would you think about putting anhydrous out there as well as granular fertilizer? This is from Tom. Well, Tom, we used to do quite a bit of anhydrous. We would do that a lot of times with a separate application, but I do know some guys that are doing some anhydrous in the fall with their strips. They've got time for that fertilizer to move around a little bit, and they can do it without having big issues. But I'd be nervous about how much you're putting right in that strip and how far away from the seed you're going to be. Anhydrous just makes me nervous. How about you, Lee?
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, it's a cheaper form of getting your nitrogen out there, but a little bit harsher form and a lot more dangerous to work with. And you got to be careful with, you know, where you're getting it placed. Are we getting the furrow close so we're not losing it? I guess I just would like to look at other forms in my book.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a little nervous about that. It can be done. I just wouldn't put too much out there and right. Make sure it's a long ways from the seed. We'll be right back with more of your questions after this. Stay tuned.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
Want to turn smart agronomics into smart economics? Go with the all-new Grow Smart Rewards program. 1. Start with a smart agronomic plan. 2. Qualify with the purchase of a participating BASF herbicide. 3. Earn $1+ per acre for each qualifying pair-up brand. Plus, you may qualify for an additional $75 per gallon back on our industry-leading fungicides. For full program details, go to growsmartrewards.com. Grow smart with BASF.
With the success of the Case IH Steiger Quad Track and Magnum Road Track tractors, it's no secret why Case IH is the leader of the track. So it wasn't surprising when the competition started imitating us. Because Case IH offered the first five-axle design to give you more power to the ground with less burming and compaction, all to help you be more productive. Still, we're flattered. In fact, if we weren't already red, we'd be blushing. To learn more, visit caseih.com/tracks.
Listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're answering your calls and questions throughout the rest of the show. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, Ag PhD Media, or Darren Hefty. All right, Lee, got a fun one here. This is from Daniel in Nebraska, and so this question's been bothering me for a while. I think I have to seek some advice here. I'm working on a phosphorus recommendation for one-year corn. So first year corn, and having difficulty figuring out how many pounds of phosphate that I need to raise one part per million of phosphorus level in the soil. I read several peer-reviewed articles, still couldn't tell what would be the best source or who I should listen to, wondering what you guys think about this. Okay, let's say that we've got some soil and it's at 10 parts per million of phosphorus right now. Say the soil pH is 6.5 and we've got 10 parts per million of Bray P1 phosphorus. Okay, that means actual phosphorus, not phosphate. And you're asking how many pounds of phosphate do I need to go up one part per million of phosphorus? So let's say that nothing is going to grow in that field, so we don't have to figure out what crop removal rates and all that. And we just want to get to 11 parts per million of Bray P1 phosphorus in that 6.5 pH soil. Well, one part per million of phosphorus times 2 in a 6-inch soil test equals 2 pounds per acre of phosphorus. So I need 2 pounds per acre of phosphorus to raise my test 1 part per million. Well, that's phosphorus. To convert over to phosphate, you multiply pounds of phosphorus times 2.3. So 2 pounds per acre times 2.3 is 4.6 pounds per acre of phosphate that I would need to add in my 6.5 pH to raise 1 part per million of phosphorus on a Bray P1 test. Now, it's challenging because there are so many different measurements for phosphorus. There's Malic test, there's Olson test, there's Bray test, and there's probably several other tests. I know there's different tests run in Canada and other parts of the world too. Kelowna test up in Canada being one of them. I don't know about all those other tests. I don't know exactly what they're looking at. And Lee brought up a great point, and you may want to mention this about the soil pH, Lee.
Yeah, and maybe it's not going to make a big difference, but, you know, as pH goes up, you know, we got a chance of it being tied up. So, you know, how much does it take to actually move that before it gets tied up? I think your formula that you did is right on there, Darren.
Yeah, it's a challenge, and it's different than the formula that we used for figuring out potassium just a little bit earlier. But the big keys here to remember are how do you convert parts per million to pounds per acre? Well, in a 6-inch soil test, you just multiply times 2. And then how do you convert pounds of phosphorus to pounds of phosphate? And that calculation is a figure of 2.3. So you multiply phosphorus times 2.3 to get phosphate. So that's kind of the big deal. Hopefully that helps, Daniel. Hopefully that's what you're looking for. And I know there are just a couple of calculations that you need to know. One is phosphate. The number's 2.3 that you use. Converting K2O potassium from potassium, that figure's 1.2. So you multiply potassium times 1.2 to get K2O potassium. It sounds goofy, and I don't want to get you overwhelmed here with numbers because that's really easy to do, but that's how I would convert that. Hey, Daniel, thanks a lot. If you want to follow up on that, you sure can as well. Got a question. This one is interesting as well from Ryan. He said, I'm in South Central Nebraska. I attended your York, Nebraska meeting earlier this year. Love learning about soil health. I'm continuing to try and improve our soil every year. I see this as the easiest cherry to pick on our farm to increase yield. My question is about ratios. When you were talking about steps to develop soil health based off of soil sample results, you mentioned the ratio of 10:1 for phosphorus to zinc. What other ratios should I be looking for? Ryan, that's a great one. That phosphorus to zinc ratio is big. If you've got phosphorus at, let's just say, 20 parts per million, we want to see at least 2 parts per million of zinc. So that's that 10:1 that you're talking about. Some high-yield growers may even look for a little tighter ratio than that. But I find that 10:1 being enough of a challenge for most soils that I look at, especially for guys that are building up phosphorus levels. Another ratio that I hear a lot about is calcium to magnesium. I'm looking at base saturation percentages between these, where I like to see a base saturation of calcium in that 65 to 70 range, and I like to see magnesium in that 12 to 14% range, depending on what soils you're in. That's roughly a 5:1 ratio. So that would be kind of what I would shoot for, but I hear other numbers, like even a 3.5:1 being out there, or I've heard a 7:1. I don't know. There's a lot of things. For me, the ideal one that I've found has been about a 5:1. And then Lee and I were just chatting about this just a few minutes ago about iron and manganese that I don't necessarily have a ratio for you. I'd like to see each of those on a DTPA soil test being at least 20, if not 40 parts per million. But I want to make sure I've got more iron than manganese. If I don't have more iron than manganese, that can be limiting for my crop. So I've got to have a little bit more iron than I have manganese, just a more than a one-to-one ratio. Anything else that pops in your mind, Lee? I guess there are a lot of ratios. I know there's a lot of different growers looking for that. We're kind of mapping some of these out on our farm and looking at different things, trying to figure out if there's another one we should be excited about.
No, you kind of hit them on the head. I mean, the biggest one that a lot of guys haven't looked at in all the soil tests that I've been looking at is that phosphorus to zinc ratio, and trying to get that in a 10 to 1 or an 8 to 1 or even, you know, tighter than that. But that's the big one. And as far as that calcium magnesium ratio, that's always a challenge too. I mean, the biggest thing that I always look at on a guy's soil test is I want to make sure that my calcium base saturation is for sure 60. Because if I'm below 60, I'm going to be inhibiting. So, I mean, that's one of the big things. You know, like Darren said, I want to be between, you know, 65 and 70. And as far as where that magnesium is, I mean, I really look at my CECs. And if I have a lower CEC, let's say that I'm in the lower teens or even in the upper single digits, you know, having that magnesium base saturation percentage a little bit higher, just have a little bit more tightness in the soil, you know, I'm okay with that. But then if I have a CEC of 30, you know, I want that magnesium base saturation to be, you know, fairly low in the lower teens if possible. So, you know, when I look at tests, that's kind of what I'm doing, and try to follow the ratios, I guess, as much as possible.
All right, got a question about one of your favorite weeds, Lee, lady's thumb smartweed. This one comes from Joe, and he said, I can relate to a lot of the chemical names as well as some of the trade names, but you get so many different trade names, and those vary depending on where you're at in the world. I'm just curious what some of the active ingredients are. I'd love to see you talk about that when you're talking about chemistry. Hey, thanks, Joe. We get that feedback from time to time about, hey, product names are different in Canada than they are in the U.S. or in Europe versus the U.S. And, you know, we're talking about the products we're using on our farm here in America. So, yeah, if there's different products, or maybe you're raising a different crop and they've got a different brand name on the product that has that same active ingredient, we certainly can talk about that a little bit more on our show. We really try to show a lot of chemical labels when we're talking about a certain product. Like, for example, with this one, we talked about Callisto as being a post-emerge product that would work. Well, that's mesotrione. So I guess I talk to growers that are in different areas, even lawns. They say, oh, I'm using mesotrione. That's on my fertilizer that I spread for a weed and feed. It does help people to relate things back to what we're using on our farm.
Well, and it's even interesting because now you're seeing more and more that people talk about the chemical family, the group family that they're in as well too, you know, group 15 or a lot of guys usually, you know the stuff by the trade name and not so much the chemical name. And I guess it's kind of good to know all three.
Yeah, I agree. It's nice to have that stuff down. So Joe, we definitely take your feedback and we'll certainly work on doing a better job with that. If we missed it on that particular weed of the week and didn't put out what some of those names are, we'll try and do a better job of sharing that. Really appreciate all the questions that have been coming in today. And I know as we get closer to spring, it's not that many weeks away for us to be planting. I just during the show today got a text from one of my friends down in Texas showing me that his corn is up and out of the ground. Thanks. I appreciate seeing that. We aren't going to see that here for a while. But I am excited for you guys that things are getting going. So as you get closer to spring and you have questions, please send them in. Again, our email address is easy. It's radio@agphd.com. And you can send stuff in, you know, 24/7 to that. And we'll try to get to your questions as quickly as we can. Thanks for listening to today's program. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now, stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.